at the UFO Congress here in Laughlin, Nevada, and we have our good friend, the Alien Hunter, and you've been up all night doing TV.
Yes, sir. It's good to be here, Jerry. It's always a pleasure to do interviews with you. You're just the cream of the crop in my books.
I love that. Thank you very much. I love this cover on your new book, The Alien Hunter, The Evidence and Light. Is that your reflection in the alien, the ET's eyes there? That looks like you.
Yes, sir, it is.
I'm looking at the cover of the books, folks, and you can see that on our website as well.
Some people may think he's kind of ugly, but maybe I'm just as ugly to him. I don't know.
And we've talked over the years about you stalking these ETs. You're serious about this, you think?
That is true, sir.
And I've seen you give demonstrations. You're saying people, they don't have to be abducted if they don't want to.
I think that you can resist. I think there are ways to accelerate your resistance. My own life shows that. My events started in 1952 when I was 3.5 years old.
Yeah, in your book you have a picture of you as a little blonde-headed boy. They look like Opie.
Well, I can't imagine that. You know, a kid being that, you know. Well, now you know why lions eat their young. Perfect example.
You kind of reminded me of when I was a kid. But so that was when you had your first experience.
Yes, sir, that is correct.
And how did you realize, 3.5 is hard to remember back. I mean, when did you realize that you had been abducted?
In the event.
Oh, you did?
Yes, sir.
And what did they do to you exactly?
Well, many people, of course, go through hypnosis and various different memory recovery techniques, which is fine. But the fact is, the reason I remember my event was because I was there and I was wide awake when it happened. Me being awake and watching the entity bothered him because I was not supposed to be awake. I was supposed to be knocked out, asleep, or whatever it is they do to you. And here I am watching him, and I'm wondering, what is that? And as a little kid, now 3.5 years old, our thinking's vastly different than adults. I'm looking at the little guy, and he's about 5 foot tall. He's a little bigger than I am, so to me he's big, but he's smaller than I am now. I'm over 6 foot. But the thing is, while I'm looking at him, I am stunned that he has no clothes on. Again, I'm just 3.5 years old, just a little tyke. At 3.5 years old, this thing has got large black eyes. They're perfectly round, not the elliptical ones that you see all these people have. And to me, like, I think what we got today, the model we have today, if that's what it is a Lexus. And, you know, the kind I saw back then was a Ford. You know, it just wasn't that hot a deal. But I noticed he didn't have any mammary glands, he didn't have a belly button, he didn't have any genitalia. And this is what really stunned me. Where is his stuff? And, of course, little kids, that's what, if they see somebody nude, that's the first thing you look at is, you know,
sure.
What is it? I remember the first time I ever saw my sister nude when I was a little tiny kid, and I thought she was deformed. I mean, what's wrong with him?
You know, right,
it didn't
right.
work. I just couldn't understand that. So the point is that...
In other words, they had nothing showing.
Nothing.
But it was nude, you're pretty sure that wasn't...
There's no question he did not have clothes on whatsoever.
Okay.
I just couldn't understand that as a child. But after 38 years of investigation and having some degree of understanding about the nature of biology and so on, it seems to me if you don't have mammary glands, you don't nurse. If you don't have genitalia, you don't reproduce. If you don't have a navel, you weren't born. So you got here either you were cloned, hatched, manufactured, or you got here some other way, but you didn't get here the way we do.
Have you come up with a conclusion about how they got here?
I have several conclusions, actually. One of the conclusions is that some of these guys, in my opinion, based on some good research, I think, literally are a combination of biology and actually some type of technology. Others seem to be very...
So in other words, part of them may be robotic in nature or humanoid, but still a robotic.
That only, seems to be the
case.
No,
they're not humanoid. They're, I don't know what we'll call
whatever.
Them, ebonoid,
I guess. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And we've dealt in great detail in some other shows. And by the way, the Daryl Sims Alien Hunter series, which has turned out to be, we have 4 shows coming up between now and the time you get to Roswell. What are you doing at Roswell this year?
Oh, good night,
and
Roswell.
I'm going to get back to the other forums here in a minute.
Sure.
But,
Roswell this year, I'm putting together another group. I'm trying to bring some scientists there. I usually bring scientists or some other interesting different points of view to presentations. So I'll have a group there for scientists for our big forum. We're also looking about going out into the desert there, Roswell. We've got a scientist who wants to go out with us to do certain kinds of tests on the area out there. And on top of that, I have, of course, my normal presentations and workshops on handwriting analysis and all kinds of fun stuff.
And you'll be able to find him, folks, in Roswell. That's actually, I'm going to be there on the 4th right on through Sunday. I don't know the official thing. I think it's the next day through Sunday.
I think so.
You're going to be there the whole week? Or
I'll be there that whole time, sir.
Yeah, right. Yes. Okay, great. Now, we're talking about the robotic ETs. What else? You said you had other theories.
Well, I actually have incidents where there's good evidence because, again, and this has nothing to do with UFO people, where the entity has actually been injured or hurt by someone that had nothing to do with UFOs or nothing to do with aliens, nothing to do with abductions, nothing whatsoever. I've had several of these reports. One of them is as of this last week that just I'm sitting there stunned listening to the story by someone who doesn't even like the subject and doesn't believe in it anyway, but it happened. But basically what they found in their incident is that that particular entity was quite biological. There was no mechanical parts, quote-unquote, in that incident.
And how did they know that? Was it bleeding or something?
The creature was actually shot.
Oh, literally?
Yes.
And what happened to it?
The incident was the story.
You know where I'm going, Darrell.
Yes, of course. Of course. Of course, you have to. That you're a journalist. This is what you do. the fact is that the story that was relayed to me was relayed to me by a vet, and they were a sniper with a spotter. Obviously, I won't give up any names or anything, but they didn't want that out. But the fact is that they were looking through what the spotter was looking. He says, "You're not going to believe this," and they see something there. And the guy gets his scope on it, looks at it. And he says, "What do you want?" He said, "Take it out," and they shot it. And the sniper took him out,
and it hurt.
It killed him. It definitely left.
Killed
it,
the ET.
Made a major mess out of him.
And does somebody have that body?
No, they did not, because it was in enemy territory, and there were a lot of enemy around at the time.
This happened in combat situation.
It did happen in combat situation. And again, these people are not UFO related. We're extremely uncomfortable. I had to. It took me 3 weeks to get the story out of these people. They just didn't want to discuss it.
Well, we only do in combat two places, so that I know of. There may be others, but Afghanistan and Iraq.
It was before that.
Okay. Okay, well, now I can't narrow it down. so no one actually has the body, but they're credible witnesses.
Extremely credible.
Did they tell you how it reacted when it got shot? I mean,
these people are as good as it gets in the area of sniping.
Uh-huh.
They're one shot.
And it's just taken
all.
Out. It just fell.
Your head is no longer in existence.
Now, you know, this book, tell me a little bit about, you know, we've talked about all the experiences, and this is a compilation of your, how long would it be now that you've been on the hunt? 20 years?
I've been on the hunt for at least 38 years.
Oh, 38, okay.
I really time the hunt from the time my son was taken. I was okay with my events, Jerry, up until the time, I mean, my events ended violently at age 17. I was elated, and I'm glad nothing else happened. Never told my wife, never told anybody else, because it's over as far as I'm concerned. Then my son at age 6 gets caught in his event, and I literally wake up at 2:30 in the morning, run into the living room. It's amazing. I knew exactly where to go. Ran into the living room, and there's my little son looking out the window in a deep trance, standing there for a long time, and I asked him what he was looking at, and he said, "The little red light." Well, this is a screen memory of the event. It's already over. They're already gone.
Mm-hmm.
But I woke up because I knew that exact feeling of my own event. And when I woke up, I ran as fast as I could to get to him. And he begged me to work with him, and I didn't want to because I knew what I was going to find. And it forever altered and changed his life. By the age, going into the next year, I asked him and said, "Son, what happened to you?" I said, "You're so different. You're like you're not my little boy." He said, "Daddy, whatever they did to me," he said, "I don't even have the same morals anymore." He said, "Something happened to me." He said, "I don't know what happened, but I'm so different now." He said, I used to be so kind and considerate and other things.
In other words, it was not like the feel-good people we hear here. It was just the opposite. This was a life-altering thing, and he felt like he might be. How's your son today?
He's excellent and is leader of...
Has he been able to overcome this?
Yes, he has. In fact, his abductions and his wife's abductions as well have stopped.
Yeah, well, that's great, great news.
We're elated.
And you haven't had anything happen to you, have
Nothing
you?
To me, although I've had encounters with the entity, but not as an abductee. We took an abductee out on an expedition where I took five investigators. I trained them specifically what to do, and we took my senior investigator as bait. Since he's going to get abducted anyway.
You and I talked at one time, and the show's coming up here in this series, in which we talk about that a little bit more, about where you said, I know how I'm going to bait these. So this is probably this incident.
Yes, and this is what we want to do. I mean, if they're going to get them anyway, why not just be there? If it's true, why not?
So
they actually showed up.
So what happened?
Well, in this particular case, we had a husband and wife. When we first get to Colorado, Gunnison, Colorado, is where this event occurred. Dale's going to be in a special tent with a guy in there with him. Outside that tent is going to be a man sitting there who is a trained observer. He's also an airline captain. His job is to sit there all night long with lights on to make sure we know the alien's never going to walk in front of him. But that's his job. Everybody's in special tents in a certain place.
Okay.
I picked a place where I know the aliens are going to land up on a plateau. If they come, they will come down the edge of a canyon this way back behind our tents and then go get Dale. The incredible thing is that on the last night, the last day of that event, because we check everything every morning, we all get our reports, nothing happened, absolutely nothing all week. And on the last night, about 2:55 in the morning, and I found this out, we put all this together after we got our stories, but here's what happened. The entities come, they go exactly where we thought they would. They went past the first couple, the husband and wife, are in this first tent. And instantly they sit up because they something's wrong. I mean, they hear something out there walking, it's slightly making noise. They both wake up instantly, look and said, what is that? And all of a sudden they both get real dreary-eyed looking at each other, and the husband says, it's just a deer. Go back to sleep. And they both fall over and instantly hit the bed and go to sleep. They both knew that was not the case. My tent's next. Now, my tent is sitting in such a way that the light from the lanterns and everything up there by Dale's and in front of this guy, it lights this whole side of my tent. All of a sudden, something comes in front of my tent, large bulbous head, approximately 3 foot tall. I've never seen this kind of entity before because its head is so big, tear-shaped, same thing, but the head is at least a third the size of the body. And I can't believe, and skinny little tiny body, it's a little tiny thing. And it's standing there. I can see the shadow of it on the edge of my tent. Well, the problem is, for him, in my opinion, I'm sitting there with a Cutco knife about 14 inches long, ready to move it right through the tent into him. And just because to me, he's just a toaster anyway. I'm just going to unplug the toaster. So he's standing there, and he doesn't get it. And I get to thinking, should I do this or should I let him? I think he's going to try to come in the tent. And so I decide, let's do an experiment. So I decided to see if I could still access him mentally, you know, like they do whenever they talk to you, but I want to do it on a conscious level. So I do that, and I'm amazed I can actually do that. I mean, I thought after all these years, you forgot and you won't know, and it probably was a dream anyway. I was actually able to access him, and I couldn't believe that I could still do that. The entity moves into the shadows, back of the tent, and he starts scratching on the back of the tent. Now, I'll explain to your audience what that means. We use a term just for the fun of it called nuking a tent. Nuking a wall or a tent means they're going to do something. It's going to look like a wall or the tent, but you can walk through it.
Okay.
The reason he's scratching isn't because he's scratching the tent to alert me or anything. He didn't think I know he's out there. The problem is the people up there, the beings up there in the craft, in my opinion, are watching this show, and they realize, oh, my God, this guy's awake. He's got a knife or whatever. He's going to catch this guy. So the little guy scratching, he can't figure out why he can't get through the tent.
So the little guy you think is probably some sort of robotic being?
He's dumber than dirt. I mean, he's got an IQ about 80. That's why they can't even get your clothes
on. Just kind of programmed, right?
And this doesn't fit the program. He's supposed to go in and do these things, and yet now the tent's not been nuked. He can't figure it out. Finally, he leaves my area, goes over to this. We got a film producer, small-time film producer. He's there. He said, something came over and started crashing my tent. It scared me half to death. I sat up, and I felt like I should go right back to sleep. At the same time, they all gave their times. This is exactly 3 o'clock in the morning.
Hold on. We got a break coming up.
Got a break.
When we come back, we're going to find out what Daryl does. He has the knife and the E.T. being scratching on the tent. It's 3 a.m. or so. It's probably cool in Colorado at that time. Adds to your chilling nature, but you fear, like the genes, nothing, right? Okay, so... maybe not. I think we could scare Daryl, but I'm not going to try. He has too bad of reactions. You know, we'll be right back. This is Jerry Pickett. It happened almost 60 years ago, but the debate still rages. Did an alien spacecraft crash outside Roswell, New Mexico in 1947? The most concise and complete series ever broadcast on Roswell, direct from Roswell. New programs added weekly. Check it out on the UFO Files on JerryPippin.com.
It looks like it's about 8 or 10 miles.
The name of the book is The Alien Hunter. The name of the man is The Alien Hunter. Daryl, we left this like a soap opera or an old Saturday serial, really. But what happened? The E.T.'s outside of the tent scratching. You're still laying there pretending to be asleep.
And he moved to the next tent where the B-grade director is at. Scratches on the tent, scares him half to death. He falls back to sleep, and he can't figure out why he would do that.
Right.
At the same time,
did you get out and look? Or
no, I wanted them all to get in the area.
Okay.
I'm hoping they're all going. There's going to be more than one, and at some point we're
so that, normally there
something,
is more than one.
Yes. In this case, we are relatively sure there are going to be at least two. They're going to come. In the other tent where Dale is at, there's a guy in there sleeping on the other side of this huge tent. He sits up. Dale sits up automatically and starts breathing. Scared out of his mind, wide awake, he knows they're here, yet nothing shows up. The other guy who's in the tent, he's scared to death because he realizes Dale knows, and he thinks obviously they're coming in, and here I am in the tent. What am I doing in the tent with this guy that's fixing to get abducted? So he's all scared. The amazing thing is the guy who's a trained observer, an airline pilot, is sitting outside the tent, doesn't know one thing's going on.
Really?
Never saw, never heard a thing. We knew this would be true. In fact, one guy said, well, why in the world did you put the trained observer out there in front when you knew they weren't going to do that?
Well, that's a good question, I thought.
It's a great question.
Yeah.
I said, because I'm not stupid. He said, what do you mean? I said, they're not going to walk in front of the guy. They're going to go through the back exactly where I wanted them to, by my tent and by the other tent, so that we'll know or have some semblance of knowledge they either came or did or were there at the time. This worked. The plan was workable.
Mm-hmm.
So the man to this day did not know anything happened other than that morning when we all made our discovery.
You had your little report. Well, what happened? I mean, did they just give up and go away?
They got out of there very quickly. Apparently somebody in the big craft was letting them know. And, of course, to me this sounds hokey. It really does. The next morning we finally told our stories. Everybody said, wow, you know, it's time to go. We all had to pack up and go anyway. We'd been here a week. We drove off down the road, got about a mile down there, and this guy hit a big rock, knocked the oil pan out of his car. So now three or four guys are working on this thing. We stop and talk to this lady who's camping very near there.
Okay.
And she says, oh, y'all were up camping up way up the canyon up there. And I said, yeah. And she says, did y'all see that UFO last night?
Oh, really?
And they called me over and said, you need to talk to this lady. And I said, what UFO? What are you talking about? What's a UFO? She's that big blue disc thing that was up there. She said, it's right there above where y'all were camped. I said, what are you talking about? Where? She points and says, right through those trees. She says, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. She described the exact
same time. She said
it was earlier than that. She said, but it left shortly after 3 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we knew they had gone. But so here we have an independent witness describing and seeing this entire event from her point of view, her perspective, seeing the craft. And we're talking about actually talking and having some interaction with the entity.
That's great that that happened, but what a coincidence. Or maybe you don't believe in coincidences either.
Well, the fact is we found out that this lady is an abductee.
Oh, really?
And she had no idea what we were doing or that we were UFO investigators, mm-hmm, or anything like that.
So is it then, is Has this been the closest encounter you've had? That's pretty close, what you had.
It's pretty close. It's the closest one I've had physically. Right. I've had two or three other encounters, even in my home, with another abductee. It turned out
we had done a show about that.
But that's further away.
Right.
This was so close that I could have reached out and literally touched him.
Now, tell me a little bit about what's in the book.
What's in the book? What's in the book is basically this book is an approach to the medical and scientific method and the police method of acquiring evidence in your own case. With this book, you don't need me. I don't like people dependent upon other people. I want people to take this book to follow the procedures in here, and if they have evidence or a case of evidence or they know somebody who has evidence, they can follow these procedures and learn how to do this stuff without me. Or you can call me, of course, and I hope they do if they do find some evidence and want it processed. But it gives the history of my own abductions, my own events, and other people's events, how I discovered fluorescence, this finger-like.
And we've got a show about that, but let's go briefly for the people listening to this show. You're saying that when these ETs touch you, they leave, it's not fingerprints, it's a smudge.
Like a fluorescent trace.
Uh-huh.
And there's different kinds, and the book goes into that in detail. Some of them are by casual contact, others are actually done on purpose, like one doctor that we worked with. And hers were not casual contact at all. They literally had a symbols printed on her. Another woman, a Mandelbrot set on the inside.
Symbol?
Of her
what
arm.
Kind of symbol would they
a
put
Mandelbrot
on?
Set was one of them.
Oh, really?
The mathematical configuration for chaos and order.
And you think because she was an intelligent woman, they did it differently? Or
I honestly don't think that has much to do with
okay.
it. I honestly don't believe that. I've been on TV for all night, literally, and the questions asked were over and over.
What were you doing there too?
Do they want us because we're smart or dumb or whatever? And they don't seem to care whether you are genius or not. It really is irrelevant in their
opinion. Yeah. I've talked to other people, and I say, well, and I've asked that question before. Well, was everybody there that was abducted in this group deal, were they all perfect specimens? And usually they say, no, they were typical people, fat people, skinny people, big people,
yes.
Old people. What's going on, Daryl?
It seems to me that these entities are interested in a genetic predisposition. By that I mean it's not about you. I mean they may use the illustration to and convince you that you're unique, special, perfect, or whatever, in order to control you to get what they want. But the fact is they don't really care about. They're always going to tell you in the future the big one. The big one never happens. I literally worked with a lady who was on oxygen. This was her last leg, literally. She said, please work with me. And it helped me find out why the blue man didn't tell me the truth. When I was a little girl, he said, I'm going to tell you the big one, the truth, and you're going to be enlightened. And she says, here I'm fixing to die.
And they haven't
When
told.
Am I going to get the truth? I said, well, and she finally looked at me and cried, and she said, they're never going to tell me, are they? I said, I don't think so. And then she died.
Do you know the truth?
The truth, I don't. I would, to me, an alien doesn't, he wouldn't know what the truth was if it were told to it. The fact is, the alien, to me, there's a hierarchy that's so vastly different than what the UFO community thinks. And I think, in my opinion, that we're wrong in the UFO community to think that way. I think that the entities that we see, the little guys, and I have this information in the book, of course, but it seems to me that all these guys that we see in our experiences, the Bigfoot, all these different creatures that we're talking about, these guys all know each other, and they basically work for someone else. They're taking orders from someone else. They're not in charge of anything, nothing.
And so you're saying even though do you buy into this deal about different types of ETs?
Oh, there are definitely different types. The question is, are they all working for the same guys or not?
And you think they are?
I think that. The ones we're looking at, the seven primary ones we're looking at, the reptile and all these others, they've been seen on craft by at least eight different people at the same time, all of them. So it's kind of like, you know, if you got some cops and some mafia and some other people all in the same room planning a crime, do you think the cops are in on that? Well, by association, I would say so.
I got where you're going with that. Right. So this book is available.
It's right on my website,
and they can order it right off of your website.
Yes. We sold about 150 copies here in the last day. I just got it here yesterday, and we've already sold 150 copies.
I was trying to say this is fresh off the press.
We've had people buy as many as 20 and 30 at a time to give to their friends.
And now you're a man with a big reputation, and the TV people talk to you, and they ask you to do what? You were up all night. What was that about?
Oh, goodness, Jerry, that was something else. Long story short is it's an advertising firm who advertises for major cities, Las Vegas, Laughlin, yep. Phoenix, and so on. It's a commercial deal. Part of it was had to do with me doing an acting part for the advertising. The second part had to do, they said, we want to do something we'd never done before, and we're taking a risk. We want to do a UFO thing. And he said that you came recommended by the conference people as the person that we should do this with. And I said, well, I'm honored. He said, I was talking to the director at this point before I got here. And he says, we did a little test run and threw your name out there. And he said, we honestly didn't expect to get over one or two stations to actually call it. And we're talking about TV stations here.
Right.
And he said, we didn't think. He said, because we don't know who you are. We are not into UFO thing. He said, we had 30 stations lined up. He said, these people know who you are. And I said, well, I'm real surprised about that. And he said, whatever it is, he said, I don't know what it is yet, but the name Alien Hunter, Daryl Sams, got 30 stations. He said, we're so excited, can't understand it. He said, it's not a risk now. We got 30 customers lined up.
Right.
So we ended up about another 10 came on last night. So I was up from 2:30 in the morning to 8:30 this morning on about 40 stations across the country.
And you didn't get much sleep because I saw you down in the restaurant about 10. So.
That was probably supper.
Were these outside shots and stuff? Or
this the whole thing was shot outside on location, about five hotels from here, on the top of a high area. So because they had their big satellite dish, they had a big huge truck. All kinds of equipment. I mean, this was really heavy duty. They spent some money on this thing.
Well, great. And I'm glad you were
part
of it.
And they pay well. That was the best part
about
it.
Well, that's even better.
It works real well for me.
Then. Of course, nobody pays like the Jerry Pippen Show. We
that's true.
We're still waiting for that check.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with Daryl Sams. The name of the book, again, is The Alien Hunter and the Evidence in Light. What do you mean by that?
The evidence you're looking for.
You're talking about
visible light, invisible light, X-ray.
Yeah, it seems as a play on that thing you discovered.
Yes, sir.
With the light, and all of a sudden you see the smears or whatever.
That is correct.
We'll be right back. Don't go away.
In March of 1997, a huge triangular ship appeared over Phoenix. Thousands saw it, and even now, years later, Phoenix is a place of UFO intrigue, sightings, experiences.
It just didn't look like anything I'd ever seen in my life.
Hear about it on The Jerry Pippen Show.
This is Jerry Pippen. We're at the UFO Congress, and Daryl Sims is here with us. And Daryl, you and I go a long ways back simply because I think your dad lived in my hometown at one time.
That was in Muskogee, I believe.
Yes.
My dad was Okie from Muskogee.
So that's pretty good. Now, you live in Houston, Texas?
That is correct, sir.
And the reason I bring up this is when you go alien hunting, is there a certain area? I mean, like deer hunting, you want to go up to Colorado or someplace?
It's an excellent question. If you want to find an alien or you want to watch UFOs for real, one of the best things you can do generically is to go ahead and follow the Rocky Mountains from anywhere from Alaska through America, through Central America, through South America, all the way down to Argentina. If you're anywhere in that Rocky Mountain range, you're going to see more UFOs and more physical contact of alien entities are going to occur there than anywhere else.
Now, you've been an investigator. That raises a red flag. Why? Why is that the place?
That's a really good question. I wished I had the answer to the big whys. Our evidence essentially points these things out.
Are you working on a theory about that or a hypothesis? Well,
we certainly are.
What do we call it in law enforcement? Scenario?
Absolutely. There are specific scenarios that these entities follow. One time I was talking to an investigator, and I said, isn't it interesting that when an abductee starts telling a true story that you can almost answer their question, really, literally fill in the blanks? He said, yes. I said, because the alien literally has a system that he uses. It's so methodical. It doesn't matter what part of the world we do our investigations, they're pretty much going to get the same treatment. So there is a system to this.
And so they have a, for lack of a better term, a playbook.
They have an M.O.
That's interesting in itself. And you are right. We've had a lot of abductees on, and there's a lot of similarities and things that happen. Okay, what are they really doing to you? What did they do to you? Why did they want Daryl Sims?
Well, again, I suspect that, and again, this is going to stretch me to the out to my limits of credibility or whatever I may have left. I suspect that that they are genetically predisposed. I don't think they care about Daryl Sims. I don't think they care about anybody. I think I'm useful, or was for 13 years, and when I became unuseful and rebellious and wouldn't cooperate, didn't want to play cow anymore, at that point, they just kind of tossed me in the trash.
And in other words, Daryl is a lost cause.
Well, the expenditures are too great. There's plenty of other people out there that are going to comply.
And you're saying, basically, for people that are listening to us that think they might be abducted or have an abductee experience, you don't have to go along with the program. Is that what you're saying?
My suggestion is you should resist.
Are you suggesting actually use violence against them, or just tell them to go away?
I don't think violence is really the answer. I think this is much more of a mental and internal thing. It may be even spiritual. One of the things I find interesting, some of our abductees don't feel they can resist or do whatever, but they want to be programmed by us to do something on board the craft. And I said, so basically what you want to be is a spy. A trained observer.
Okay, we have about 10 minutes left with Daryl Sims. And a lot of people come to this conference, don't they?
They sure do. And then, of course, whenever Jerry Pippen gets here, they all clamor around wanting to get on your station. Everybody knows Jerry, and they know that you carry good programming and that you do good work.
Thank you again. You know, when we talk about this organization here, for instance, and this conference, this is a huge international flavor, and you're no stranger to international activities. You go overseas quite a lot.
That's true. I just got back from Switzerland, Germany, Italy, Athens, and a week in Turkey.
So what is there a difference of attitude, or do the same things happen everywhere around
the world?
It's
the same thing. It's just different names. I'm on the airplane talking to a Turkish guy on the way over. He says, what do you do? So I told him. I described alien abduction. He didn't get it. And then I asked him, I said, explain to me what the jinn are like. These are these mythical creatures. It's just them in another language.
Recently talked to Andruffel about that. And
so he freaks out and starts describing alien abduction. I said, I thought I just described it. And he said, I never put the two together.
Yeah.
It's the same scenario. It's just different terms.
There does seem to be a paranormal influence, or a spiritual, or whatever, or another realm here. How do you feel about interdimensional things? Is that involved in this? I'm a kind of knock on the saucer door guy, but maybe I'm missing the whole point.
Well, I think that the idea of the entities being interdimensional or something of that flavor is more accurate than them being extraterrestrial.
In other words, we may literally be talking about demons.
It's possible, but the reason I have a difficulty with that is I am very familiar with demons and the nature. A demon, by definition, is a discarnate spirit. That means they had a body but now don't. They're looking to inhabit one. Aliens already have a body, and they're not inhabiting anybody. So there is no correlation whatsoever. People often will mistake this, but a demon is absolutely vastly different, has a totally different agenda, and is not the same kind of creature here. It just isn't.
So, what do you draw from all of these 38 years of experience? You're talking about that it's not good, right? Basically, or is there anything
pretty
good
much
about this at all?
Well, I don't think it is in the sense that I don't think when my son, 6 years old, looks at me, and I look at him, I said, "Son, something has happened to you since your event." And he looked at me in tears, and he said, "Daddy, I'm not your little boy anymore.
You're right.
My consciousness has changed." A six-year-old kid telling me this. He said, "I'm not your little boy." And he said, I don't even have the same morals anymore. He said, I'm ashamed to say that I'm not what you raised?
Well, as we mentioned earlier in the program, your son, you think, has turned out okay now. He's beat
this.
Yes,
he's beat it.
But are you, by inference, are you saying that maybe some people are out here doing no good at all because of their experiences? In other words, are they becoming killers or whatever?
Well, I'll give you an example, and okay. I don't know this to be true, but this last week I got a letter in the mail, and I have about a dozen letters from inmates in prison.
Okay.
These letters, they often will listen to me on Art Bell or whatever, some program, some goofy thing like that. And this one particular guy emailed me and said, I heard you on the Jerry Pippin show. And I said, so where are you at? And he said, I wrote him back and said, where are you? And he said, didn't you see the outside of the letter? He said, I'm in prison. I said, no, wait a minute. Why are you writing me about an abduction? He said, no. He said, I was abducted in prison.
Oh, really?
He said, the reason the guard can't tell anything about it, because he was taken at the same time, and if he admits that he was missing, he's fired. He said, but we sit and talk about this. He said, we don't talk. Guards and us don't have any decent interaction. He said, but when it comes to abduction, he said, we're like, we know each other because we're taken at the same time.
And why would they be going to prisons and taking people?
I don't know. I suspect they were just going to continue their program. But I've got several of these. But the thing that bothered me
was that basically maybe he became a criminal because of this experience with the ETs.
That's possible. I don't know that to be the case. But I think it was interesting that the abductions continued even in prison. But I did get a letter this last week, and this was rather amazing to me. He's been charged with murder, killed his mother, and he's in jail for this reason. He wanted me to help him, and I said, what is it that you want? And he says, I have an implant. And I said, well, a lot of people say that, and they don't. He says, I have an implant, and that's what caused me to create some of these problems that I've got. And he said, but I did not kill my mother. Please help me to... Of course, now, people do this all the time to get out of the fact they committed a crime. They want somebody to get them off or whatever, get them out of the deal. But I don't know whether he's innocent or not. I actually don't know this. But if what he's even said was half true, it sounded like somebody messed his case up pretty bad in the prosecution.
Well, that does happen. And like you say, also the other scenario happens.
Absolutely.
And it's hard to keep them straight.
Yes, sir.
We've only got about 5 minutes left here. So would Daryl Sims like to bring out to our audience that we haven't talked about, other than this book is just now fresh off the press?
This is actually the second printing of the book. This book now has 8 pages of color pictures, which the other one did not have.
The other one didn't. That's the reason I'm referring to it as a different book. You got some interesting pictures in there. The one that stood out when we talked about was you at 3.5, but some of those other pictures pretty well tell the Daryl Sims story.
That's true. The one picture I like in there is a picture, and I'm holding a little container here, showing it to you, of a little black object inside this little container given to me by the late Dr. Carla Turner. This object has a material in it that was examined by a forensic pathologist by Candy, and he freaked out when he saw it.
And you got that in the little vial there. Roberto will take a picture of that here.
The thing that's interesting about this is the fact that he said this compound cannot exist in this matrix, and you won't use my name in connection with it. What we found out so far about this material is it's biological and metallic at the same time.
Now, you, when we first got acquainted, we talked. You did the implant, a lot of implant,
yes,
and you're still involved in that. So, what are we talking about when we say it's a combination like that?
Well, how
do you know? I mean, is it soft and pliable?
The forensic lab discovered this. That's why they're scared to be a part of it, because that can't exist. It just doesn't exist. But again, if we're talking about the entities being biomechanical, you may have some evidence here. Now, the interesting story behind this, Candy Collar Turner told me the story. She said this woman was raped by something that looked like a pig. It was some kind of a creature on the craft, and there was a man who was a witness to this. These are the scrapings vaginally from her. This is the material we found, and that was the term that was given. She said, I'm giving it to you to find out what happened.
So something that looked like a pig's face raped. So some of these ETs do have sexual organs, not just like...
Well, that. I don't know if it's an ET. It might have been some creature that they had there. For whatever reason, that, in my opinion,
is probably a screen memory. I get what you're saying. You're saying that... This is Menagerie, and then you bring up the Scream Memories, and
you don't know what did what. You really don't know. All we know is she was raped, and that's the material left in her vaginally. So if we can determine what the material is, if it is biological and it is metallic at the same time, and that compound exists in that matrix, which it's not supposed to, it might suggest that whatever raped her, if that is in fact part of the case, may have been of that type of material.
And it could have been another species of the
could have
abducted,
been. So we don't know.
Don't know too much.
But it's,
about
it's amazing stuff that a forensic lab wouldn't want to touch it.
And so, what's your next step with that? You're kind of
next
stuck?
Step is I'm happy to say that that I'm broke. I've spent every dime I could on my UFO business.
Well, we're
going to
sell hundreds of thousands. That, of
probably,
these, right?
But the fact is, I. But for those of you who don't know, I actually was really upset about this, and I prayed about it even. And some remarkable thing happened a few weeks ago. I found a building that was 60% finished, 60,000 square feet on 7.5 acres. And I picked it up for $900,000, and it's worth about $6 million. If I can sell it or I can build it out and finish it out, it'll be worth a lot more. My days, all my trips, events, and all kinds of things are finished, and I can go forward 9,000 miles an hour, just like my wife says I need to do.
So they can go to your website, give out the website again, and they can contact you.
www.alienhunter.org. If you have evidence or an event,
well,
you want to
I'm
talk
thinking
about
selling that property for you. I want you to make it.
Well, here's the deal. Now, this is since I am a believer in sharing, anybody that sends me a buyer, or in other words, I don't care if you know somebody who knows somebody, and you send me the buyer, they ultimately buy that property because I'm going to give it to them at a steal. I'm going to make it worth somebody's time. If you do that, I will give. It's a commercial property. It's worth double. The land's worth double even what I thought it was.
Okay.
But the point is, I will pay 1 point to whoever does that. That can be anywhere between over $100,000. I'll give that money to them, period, if you send that person.
Okay, you heard it here on the Jerry Pepin Show. Daryl's ready to hand out 100 G's, maybe.
Works for me.
Yeah. Well, I go by the old axiom myself. I'd rather have 10% of something than 100% of nothing. So,
well, when you spend all you've got, all your 10% of everything on abductees and on these experiences and everything else, and you're broke, you got to do something else, and that's what I need to do. I've got to solve this thing permanently for me, and this will do it.
Okay, Daryl Sims, we wish you luck on that, and I hope you get a bite or two. And I hope you sell a lot of books. The book, again, can be bought at DarylSims.com. It's called The Alien Hunter, Evidence in the Light. And it's your blood, sweat, and tears are inside there, right?
Yes, sir. It's all there.
Thank you very much, Daryl. Until next time, this is Jerry Pippin. Don't go away. We have a lot of shows coming up. But I have one more segment before we wrap this one up. Daryl, thanks a lot.
The biggest secret ever is about to be revealed. Fast Walkers, UFO and Alien Disclosure.
Words you were never meant to hear.
It's clear we're dealing with a cosmic Watergate.
This is the biggest secret in the history of the human race, the known modern history of government.
Photos you were never meant to see. Video you never knew existed. People you were never meant to meet.
As Jack Nicholson would say, you can't handle the truth.
Essentially everything that you would want to know has been covered up.
Things you were never meant to know about.
No one has produced a higher quality, better produced DVD. Anytime. Anywhere. Fast Walkers, now available on DVD for only $19.95 at ShopJerryPippin.com.
Well, we are broadcasting direct from Laughlin, Nevada, and I want to remind you that the UFO Congress is over now, but there'll be another one coming up next year, and it's not too early to get the early bird invitation. If you'd like to find out more information about next year, simply write us here at Jerry@JerryPippin.com or go over to our conference page and click on the UFO Congress page. We have with us now Lieutenant Colonel, United States Air Force, retired Lieutenant Colonel Don Ware. Don is active with the UFO Congress here in Laughlin,
and around the world, actually. Don, you're getting ready to go on a big trip, I know. You know, Colonel Ware was actually the first person we ever recorded for a UFO interview, and that was many, many years ago. Too far back, really, to remember. Welcome to the show, Don.
Hey, you got to get inside in just a minute, but tell me a little bit about this. So you were telling me what happened on stage yesterday, and this all goes together.
Yeah, last night we were watching Michael Horn give a talk, and he talked a bit about the Talmud of Emmanuel, and when he quoted Jesus as saying in 2,000 years, there will be a new revelation for humanity. The little light went off in my head, and I thought, gee, he's talking about the Urantia book. And I'm absolutely sure that, because that was 2,000 years from the end of his life is when that book was first acquired. Now that book has been translated into 18 languages, although it was first published in 1955. And I think it's been published in at least 12 of those languages. It will serve humanity well for the next 100 years or more, I'm sure. And, you know, I've always thought that any nonfiction book is the most useful thing humans have because it allows us to take our life work and pass it on to future generations. And that Urantia book is by far the best book I've ever come across.
Now, you brought us a man here. Tell me a little bit about this man.
Gary Rawlings, I've met at conferences before that are Urantia Association conferences, and I'm so impressed with his knowledge of the book. He happens to be the membership chairman for the Urantia Association International.
And we'll carry on the conversation with Gary and let you get in there and do your real job.
Thank you, Terry.
And we'll be seeing you in Eureka.
Okay.
And this UFO Congress, you guys have done a wonderful job.
Yeah, and you know, you asked me to tell you about my Bigfoot stories in Eureka Springs.
Yes, and we're going to do that. We're going to do that. It's on the schedule. Are you from the UK or where?
Yes, Jerry. I'm. As I said, my name is Gary Rawlings. I'm from Wales in the United Kingdom.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
And why don't you explain to our listeners exactly what this is all about?
Well, I'd like to pick up what Don said about Michael Horn about over 2,000 years after Jesus has departed from the planet. The planet we call Urantia, Planet 606, the planet of the cross, the tainted planet. And when Michael Horn said about this revelation, this is exactly the time. The information for the Urantia book started coming in 1924, and it was collated by 1936 and published in 1955.
Now, is this a collection of people who wrote this, or one person did it, or what?
There are no human authors in this book. If you have a look at the actual authors, their deities are very high level. It started as through a sleeping subject, and then it was a question and answer, and then it moved on to a forum. Eventually, all this information, as I said, was from 1924 to 1936 collated, and then published in 1955 by the Urantia Foundation. It's in a number of languages, and it's increasing on a yearly basis.
Now, is this, you do consider this a backup to conventional Christianity, or is this in contrary to it, or exactly how does this fit in?
That's a very interesting question. This is not a new cult. It's not a new religion. It's a book. I think that on the cruise that...
Now, this book is being sold in 18 countries at least.
Well, it certainly is. We've just had the translations for Germany and also for Italy. And, of course, there are more in the pipeline when funds become available.
And do you have a... you mentioned this organization at the top of the show. Is it... Do you have a website or something? Can people find out about this place and read about it?
Correct. I mean, say the Urantia Foundation goes through urantia.org, and the Urantia Association International also has that with the .org scenario there. There are two different facilities for this. The foundation actually prints the book, and also the translation of the book. The Urantia Association International, it sets up the study groups not only in America but around the world, and it's like a family, and it's a tremendous family. Sometimes I know that you can pick your friends, you can pick your family, and I'm very lucky to pick this particular family.
Now when we talk about this entire situation, can you give me a synopsis? I mean, there's several things in here, that there's several sections, right? What's in the book exactly?
Well,
it's a thick book, so you can't...
Exactly, yes. The book is split into four parts, the central universe, the local universe, the history of Urantia. I mean, say this...
And what is Urantia?
Urantia is the name of this planet. It's, as I said, Jerry... Earth is Urantia. And then you've got the wonderful life and teachings of Jesus, which is over 700 pages. And it is quite a phenomenal book to read. When it was introduced to me, it was introduced to me as the most important book I will read in my lifetime. And it really is. It is something very, very special. And there are a number of so many interesting topics in there that covers all the way.
What kind of topics?
Well, for instance, this is known in a nutshell as the fifth apocryphal revelation. Do you know what the other four apocryphal revelations were?
No, I wanted to find out if this is a fifth. Tell me about the others.
Okay. 500,000 years ago, we had the Lucifer Rebellion, and that involved Lucifer, Dalagasta, Caligasta, and Satan.
That's the first...
That's right, and basically what happened, God had given these deities the confirmation that to oversee the planet of Urantia. And there was the called, as everybody knows now, the Lucifer Rebellion, because they didn't want to follow the way God wanted it to be. Okay? The second one then from that is 48,000 years ago. We had two of the most important people, and we wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for them. And that's Adam and Eve. They came from Salvington. They were 7 foot violet race. People, and their DNA with the various tribes, such as the Nordites, created a very special breed of people, and from that coming down from there, the Cain from Adam and Eve, you had Cain and Abel, and it was a default.
We've done many shows about the UFO and ET connections with biblical history, and so this is basically what we're talking about now.
Very much so, a seraphic type transport that came in 48,000 years ago. There were two gardens of Eden. Correct. Yes.
Tell me about that.
Well, the first Garden of Eden, everybody's still trying to find out where it is. It's in several locations. Well, we really believe it's off the coast of Cyprus, and it was all one part, one piece of land. It went on then onto the Middle East part, which is the Lebanon. And
we had the general
location.
Syria,
yeah. That's the general location. The second one, which is very interesting, is where all the major trouble is today, and that is in Iraq, or Mesopotamia, it was known at that particular time.
We could do a whole show on that, but we'll get you back on that. Now, how about the third one?
Okay, the third one is one of the most important people that, again, came here. Macaventa, I got to get this right this time, Macaventa Melchizedek, or the Melchizedeks. This man is in 29 Bibles, and he is just in a little short notice, El Ayun, the high priest. But he was on here, it was over 20-odd pages here. He was here for 94 years. And when he appeared in the tent at the time of Abraham. Abraham was actually a student to him, and his emblem was the three concentric circles.
Wow.
94 years later, his teachings went everywhere. They went to the Levant, the Orient. Confucianism, Buddhism are the watered-down versions of this wonderful person and the people that took these teachings to these all over the world.
Now, we've covered three. We got to get to fourth and fifth.
Okay, well, the fourth is the most unique person that ever walked this planet, and that is Jesus. Jesus from Nazareth, as we know him. But we know him as Michael and Abaddon. And he had a bestowal. It was a total 100% bestowal coming down to this earth. And he had to be born, and he had to live, and he had to die as a human being. And when he left, when he departed, he made 19 appearances in a Maronsha form. Now, this is very interesting.
Yeah, tell me about that. You got my attention with that. 19?
19 appearances after that resurrection. And the Maronsha form is not even in the dictionary. We have a concordance, because when we were given this book, there were some words you could not put into the dictionary. Maronsha, M-O-R-A-N-T-I-A, is basically transparent. And the easiest way is when Jesus said to Mary Magdalene, "Mary, do not touch me, know me as I was," because her hand would have gone through him. He was in a transparent form. And he made 19 appearances after the...
All there in the same area.
In very much in the same area around Galilee, Jerusalem... Uh-huh.
And this, I think, takes quite a few pages, just this part about Jesus in this book, right?
It certainly does. It's over 700 pages. Yeah. But the story is, it's very... In the Bible, there are 5 to 6 years of his life are missing.
Oh, really?
This book, the Arantia book, tells you where he actually met up with Ganad and Gaynad, father and son, from India. They went from Alexandria. They went to Crete. They went to Cyprus. They went to Naples in Italy. They traveled up into the Northern Lakes, into Switzerland. They come back via Rome. They went on to then Damascus. It's incredible. It's just a wonderful story.
Now, let's get to the last one.
The last one is this, the Arantia book. The fifth apocryphal revelation is that. And Michael Horn, on what he said yesterday, is correct. This is going to be the revelation. But we can't, in everybody that's associated with the Arantia book, we cannot cast pearls before the swine. I cannot run up and down a bus with this. But if I see somebody who has got any knowledge or are interested in this particular book, then I can tell them about that.
And let's give the websites one more time. We're out of time here. The clock's got us. So we can people can check into this.
Okay. Well, you've got the website is, and which you can actually check out the Ranch Association International. You can get this through the same one website, and that's you can go to www.urancha.org. And you'll be able to get to both sides from there.
I wish we had more time. You just kind of scratched the surface, but we got a general idea. People need to follow this up.
Well, very much.
You have no doubt this is the straight skinny.
Very much, Jerry. If I can just relate to this now. That's
okay.
I came over to Nevada, and my mom died on Sunday. And it was very difficult for me to come, but I had to come the same time as Terry Brown died.
Right.
But Mom is on her way now. Hopefully, if she's fused with a thought adjuster, and that's another superb story. Not a story, a fact as far as we're concerned. And I hope that she has fused.
We normally say they're going to heaven. Now, what are you saying happens to them?
What we're actually saying is that we all have what they call a thought adjuster, and we really don't know about it, but people who have got the book from 107, pages 107 to 112, will tell you about this thought adjuster. And with this thought adjuster, it keeps the record of your life while you're down here on this planet. So when you actually go from here and you fuse with that thought adjuster, what happens? You then go to the first, you actually go to a place called the Resurrection Hall, and from the Resurrection Hall then the two components, which is the thought adjuster and your soul, enter into a coffin type scenario. And then from that, when they come out, they come out when you were the best on this planet, when you had everything, when you were the most good-looking person there, when you had all your faculties, but you'd be in a Marantia form. Wow. What is that somewhere to look for? That's something special.
We extend our hand of sympathy about your mother's death, but sounds like she's in a better place.
Very much so. This is a very hard place down here, and the greatest thing that we all as humans need to have is teamwork, love and teamwork. There's no room for pride, egos in this world. And if we can work together, because this is the greatest thing. When you're up there, teamwork is there. Now she's going there to sublime adventure, and she is going to be awoken on the shores very, very shortly. And I know Mom will be there when I get there as well.
Thank you very much for that. We mentioned it just then. Terry Brown passed away just as the conference got underway, and we've mentioned it on the air before. Bob Brown and daughter Nikki have done a wonderful job, and the rest of the UFO Congress.
Wonderful. I'm going to say it. I'm just overwhelmed at the kindness that the people here in Laughlin, right, in Nevada has shown us, and I trust that many more people will come to the next Congress meeting in February of next year. And I look forward to seeing people there, and I know they're going to enjoy themselves.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry.
Okay. With that, we'll close. This has been a show from the UFO Congress. Roberta Scott's our on-location producer. Our tape editor was Jane Swartley. Until next time, cheers.
The doors are finally open at shopjerrypippin.com. Explore our new iShop. It's open and growing. You can use any major credit card or your checking account with our PayPal connection. Our first edition t-shirt selections features three different Jerry Pippin UFO files designs. In addition, we will be adding collector t-shirts from select UFO conferences, as well as several novelty items. Check us out at shopjerrypippin.com.